Welcome to the Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. No questions or comments today because we don't want to hear them.
We got some question or comments to make tonight.
We got someone on.
Yeah, we're going to have a guest on who picked this actually really good piece of music here. Yeah. So we're going to talk to this guest in a few seconds here as we...
It's the first classical music pick of...
First ever, I think, in the hockey show's
300
history.
300 plus shows.
Fantastic pick.
Yeah. I like listening to myself some classical music every so often.
Yeah,
it's CBC Radio.
I had it on today. It was good.
Sometimes I have it on at work, and everyone looking at me like, "What's wrong with you?"
I'm like, nothing wrong. I am calm and collective.
Right
there you
now.
Go. Yeah. So we're gonna get to this this guest right now. Okay, she is fairly important. She's obviously going to be a featured guest here for the evening, and hopefully friend of the show in the future.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Hockey Show is proud, humbled, privileged, and honored to welcome a new friend of the show. Hopefully after today, as I fade out.
We never know. Like they might not want to come.
Well, you never know, but hopefully she will. You may not know her name before this interview, but Jetta Ratcliffe's name is one you'll want to remember from this time forward. Besides being a member of the Boston Blades, she has won countless inline hockey gold medals, including last month in Italy, where she helped Team USA down the Czech Republic team at the World Inline Hockey Championships to capture gold once more. When she's not dominating on the ice or floor, she holds a pretty incredible job, which we'll talk about as well. Tonight, we learn all about this incredible person as we welcome goaltender Jetta Ratcliffe to the show. Jetta, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Wow, I'm honored. Thank you for having me.
No, we are honored to have you on. That's fantastic that you've decided to join us. Let's start with the obvious here in terms of what's going on. How are you?
I'm doing great. I got off work not long ago. We went by a food co-op and came right home and excited to speak with you guys today.
Right on. This is going to be fun. So let's jump back. Let's go back to the very beginning when your parents, John and Kathy, along with your brother, Skyler, welcomed a wee baby girl to the family. you were born in Antioch, California, but moved to Bend, Oregon as a youngster. So what was childhood like for Jetta in the Ratcliffe household?
Ooh, in the Ratcliffe household. First off, I was definitely an accident. my mom really was not expecting to have a child at 41, so I was a pleasant surprise. And when I was very young, I used to go to my brother's outdoor hockey games. He would play roller hockey and, you know, get those cute little... those little skates that attached to your shoes, and hobble around there, and that's how it all started. I've been enjoying putting on skates ever since.
So, I mean, tough question, I mean, maybe for you, because you may not know, and maybe you've never asked, but that's okay. But what age did you move from California to Oregon, and what prompted the move to Bend, Oregon?
My mother actually and my father, they moved around a little bit, but at about 6 months old, I moved to Bend. So I actually lived there a majority of my life. So it's kind of weird to think about because I'll be in Boston definitely for quite a few more years and that kind of stuff with my job and everything like that. So at some point, the numbers will change. So a majority of my life will be... it won't no longer be a majority of my life, but I hope to make it back one day. I really love Oregon, and that's where I met my husband, and so I have an affinity for Oregon. It's a different pace of life out there. So.
No, absolutely. I mean, I've been to Portland once, and it's completely different than what everything else seems to go. It seems to move at its own time speeds there. So in doing some reading, we almost missed out on Jetta the goaltender. As you started as a ballerina in your youth, what happened to the ballet shoes eventually?
goodness sakes. When I was younger, I couldn't really remember the entire routine when I was a ballerina. So my mother actually, I believe she has on video somewhere, an actual dance recital. I couldn't really remember, so I had a little... fairy wand. I must have been maybe 4 or 5 years old. I definitely remember it, but I couldn't remember where I was in the routine, so I just started, like, hitting the girl next to me with the wand, and then, like, there's something on the ground, so I start stick handling with it.
Right
so
on.
I was, like, putting her hands, you know, or her face in her hands, going, like, oh, goodness, that's my daughter.
That's okay.
I think she realized that was a point that I really wanted to switch over.
I was going to say, you were trying, and you certainly did what came naturally to you, obviously, so good for you. It seems you followed in your brother's footsteps, though, as he played inline hockey. being that you're, I'm going to go out and say it here, being that you're a superstar in both ice hockey and inline hockey, which of these two sports was the first to see Jetta the goaltender, and how did you decide that you were going to be the one to stop pucks rather than score?
Ooh, I did enjoy playing out a lot. However, when I was younger, there was only inline hockey in my town.
Okay.
Mean, if we played ice hockey, it was either out on a pond, and my mom would occasionally send me to, you know, a goalie camp. I went to a lot of goalie camps when I was younger in ice hockey, but everything was inline hockey in my town, so that's actually what I grew up playing the majority of the time. And so I always wanted to be like my brother, and we had an outdoor rink, so that's where I first played goaltender, and I just fell in love with it. And we also had a boys team in town. There were no girls teams. There was one of two girls. And so, you know, the goalie, they said they wouldn't take me as a player, but the goalie position was open, and I loved to do it, and I turned out to be okay at it at the time. So my mom would take me down to the park and, you know, help me work on my coordination.
Sure.
So I really loved it, so I stuck with it, and so I guess maybe inline saw me as a goaltender first,
okay.
But definitely played ice hockey, walked out a few, my first time with my skate guard still on, no idea what I was doing, but when I think I was around 10 when I did that, so
okay.
Yeah, played great. Both my whole life.
And did well at both, and you know, your entire life as well, so congratulations on that. Speaking of that practicing that you were doing, true or false, you can certainly deny this if you want, but I'm pretty sure it's true. You used to head down to the local batting cages in Bend in full goaltending gear and pull a Happy Gilmore by stopping and deflecting balls that were being pitched by the pitching machines at you.
I'm going to have to go ahead with true. I did that a lot as a younger person. Wow, how did you know about that one?
We did a little digging.
I was about to talk to my mom.
We did a little digging.
You would be surprised. What
there's some other stuff we're going to ask you. You're going to be like, seriously, where did you find that?
That's great.
How, like, what are the reactions of people when they see you doing that?
Oh, when I was younger, I don't even think I was looking at people looking at me. I was just focused on stuff, and the softball is probably bigger than my head coming at me.
So we're going to have to talk to mom at some point and find out what the reactions are. Are you seriously doing that to your daughter in terms of putting you in there? But usually we ask players that we've had on the show about playing other sports in their youth. It's a big thing, obviously, in the social sort of realm right now about trying to get kids to play more sports. You not only played, but kind of dominated in another sport as well. At one point in your life, you were one of the top three skiers in the U.S. developmental program for both downhill and Super G, which is pretty darn impressive. So how did hockey become the sport of choice over skiing?
It was a tough choice when I was younger to choose between the two, because it came down to a point where ski racing is a very expensive sport, and, you know, hockey can be as well. And so I did my best to just pick the one that made me feel the happiest when I played it. And maybe that's a good lesson for younger players, because you got to love what you do, right? So
yep.
Even though, you know, if I would have continued on with ski racing, I mean, one of my close friends, you may have heard of her, Jackie Weil, she's gotten ski in the Olympics. Unfortunately, broke her leg before this last Olympics. Just all around amazing person. I've learned so many lessons from her, and I just remember I was actually talking to her about it. She's like, just pick whatever one you love the most. I was like, that, it makes it so simple. So I decided to pick hockey, and it wasn't always the easiest road, but I'm happy I did. I do miss ski racing, you know, every single day. I love it. Just nothing compares the feeling of, you know, going 75 miles an hour down a course and getting down, and you're like, whoa, still alive. So it's definitely a rush. And I miss it, but I'm very happy I chose hockey as well.
Speaking about Rush, as you were just saying, how much you loved it, you were doing it for 3 years by the time you hit 12. And your coach at the time, Shanna Schweitzer, said, quote, despite one wipeout in which she twisted an ankle and another where she fractured her arm, she didn't miss any time nor any races. Are you legitimately that much of a diehard for skiing that you're going to risk life and limb for that?
It's interesting, because ski racing is it can be a very dangerous sport.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, I'm dad always, when I was, you know, there's watching my friends compete in ski races, you never want to see them fall or anything like that because the speeds are very high. But you have to believe that you're going to make it all the way down. So that's, there has to be a confidence factor there. And ski's also a different, I guess it's a different lifestyle than hockey is. You know, it's very, being up on the mountain is very calming. It's always, and no matter what mountain you ski on, it's very beautiful. So you just kind of have to calm your mind. And I guess that relates a lot to being a goalie. You have to have a calm mind. So yeah, hopefully those skills are transferable.
Seems to be working out okay for you. So not only are you an elite multi-sport athlete, you also have a touch of the arts in you, in that you, you're a fairly accomplished cello player, from what I understand. When did you start? When did you start playing? Don't say you're not. I know what the real truth here. When did you start playing, and do you still play? Obviously, you don't play in a symphony or anything yet, but maybe that's in the future. Carnegie Hall? No.
Oh, you know, I actually it's been on my list for quite a few years to get a cello again.
Yeah.
I do not play anymore right now. Given the chance, anytime I see a cello, I try to pick it up and I make some noises. I don't know if it sounds like great. But I started playing when I was in sixth grade.
Okay.
And I actually had to quit by the time I left high school just because I had a lot going on with other sports, that kind of thing. So it was also a very calming activity. Wow, look at all these calming activities weaving together. But it's actually, I never really had an appreciation for classical music until I played classical music. It's very calming, it's very beautiful, and it's kind of fun to master something like that. And I don't think I ever got close to mastering it, but it was very fun. You know, you get your Star Wars theme, and you can play that on the cello. It's really cool, you know. So when you're a kid, that's the kind of stuff you get excited about.
Yeah, yeah. I got to ask, just because you mentioned it, when you said whenever you see a cello, you try and pick it up. Where are you hanging out that you find cellos all over the place?
Oh, every once in a while, I feel like I'll end up going to someone's house or something, and they have a cello, and I'm like, can I play it? Or they'll have a violin.
I have a feeling the people she knows are a little bit more fancier than the people we know.
I don't know anybody with a cello, to be honest. So Jenna's got these incredible friends. I'm going to say that, to be honest.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. Anytime I've seen one, you know, it's like somebody when they find a piano, you know, you got to go up and play, you know, twinkle twinkle little star or something.
I mean, piano is sort of the starter instrument for most kids, not a cello. So yeah, I can understand that. But but let's keep going then. Let's jump to 2009. You played in your first Fédération Internationale de Roller Sport Senior Women's World Inline Hockey Championship in Varese. Am I pronouncing that right? Varese?
Yep.
Italy. Since then, you've been back to Italy three more times. You visited Colombia. You went to Argentina. You went to China. Did you ever think you'd see the world on rollerblades?
Oh, you know, I have to say that I feel very blessed to be able to represent my country and have, you know, for it to be able to allow me to travel so much. You know, I think that it's been a really cool way to travel too, because you not only get to represent a cause that's so much bigger than yourself, right, when you pull on that jersey, but then also to see the world. I mean, when we were in China last year, it was amazing to see the Great Wall. You know, when we were in Italy this year, even though we had a competition there previously, we got to see an observatory and really learn about like the history and World War One in Asiago. It was just absolutely fascinating, and it's something that I hope that I never take for granted, the fact that inline hockey has helped me travel so much, and the same with ice hockey, really. So I just try to find those like little hidden nooks that you know, you're not going to find it on, you know, the Yelp reviews or you know, top 10 places to visit, but you know, a little gelato stop somewhere in Italy, and you know, learning the history of the people that live there. It's very humbling experience.
Yeah, I know. I mean, color me envious, because that sounds like it'd be super fun. The 2013, though, World Inline Hockey Championship was a special one, as it was held in Anaheim, California, for you.
Yes,
so we're gonna throw a bit of a curveball at you here. How many friends and family were there to watch you? And how does it feel to capture gold on home soil against your arch rivals in Canada?
Oh, goodness. That one was a really tough game, and it was so much fun. I had, you know, basically my whole family in the stands. We had my billet family, we had extended family, we had friends, everyone. My grandmother is there, and she is one of the most important people in my life, and she is just such a calming presence. She's so wise, and I hope to always emulate her. And it's always nice when she can come watch me play hockey, because she doesn't get to really ever watch me play. So it's always nice to have her there. So that was definitely a special treat. And I think we scored the two goals probably in the last 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah.
So because we were down 1-0 the whole game, so it's definitely a nail biter. I didn't want, you know, grandma to be disappointed up there. So.
You guys pulled it off, though. That's the important part. But you guys have been doing this quite regularly. Since 2002, U.S. has never missed a podium at the FIRS World Inline Hockey Championship, amassing 9 gold medals, 6 silver medals, and 2 bronze medals in that time. Among the teams that always seem to hit the podium, though, are you guys, Team USA, Canada, the Czech Republic, and more recently, Spain. Are you noticing growth in the inline hockey community as much as the growth in ice hockey across the world?
Absolutely. I mean, it's amazing to play in the CWHL because they have the girls, you know, they come out on the ice with us and that kind of thing. You see the girls out at the games, you know, young girls, and it's great to see the sport grow. And then this year, I would say, is probably one of the most difficult competitions we've ever had at World Championships. It's great to, like, have countries come out, and, I mean, New Zealand played us to a tie in the regulation and then went to OT and definitely held their own, and then we ended up going to a shootout, and we squeaked out a 2-1 win. It's awesome to have so many countries participating, and, you know, it's great to do grassroots, like, reaching out in ice hockey, and then also, too, in inline hockey, there's a lot of, basically, to be able to enter the sport, it costs a lot less.
Okay.
So it gets people playing hockey in a lot of countries you wouldn't necessarily expect. I mean, we have teams that come from Namibia, which is in Africa, teams all over Europe, all over Asia. We have teams that come from India and, you know, Australia, New Zealand, and especially because their prices is exceptionally high to fly over the pond. So
yeah.
It's really cool to see the development in those countries, too. So not just hockey growth in North America, which is wonderful to see, and I love being a part of it there, and then also kind of seeing it on the international level, too.
Yeah, I mean, there's been some teams in there that they pop up every once in a while on the podium there, but, I mean, like you said, there's teams from New Zealand that are in there. There's Chinese Taipei had a great junior team this last year, so looks like there's going to be some great growth, hopefully, in the future for you as well. But for those that are unaware, how do the rules differ from ice hockey in terms of the obvious is obviously ice, we know that, but how do the rules differ in terms of inline hockey from ice hockey?
Ooh, so you have a couple of rule changes. So you're going to have a 40-minute game instead of a 60-minute game, so only 2 periods. Some play 3 periods. Depending on where you're at, but the international regulation is 2 periods. There's no offsides or icing, so it's a really fast-paced game, and it's 4-on-4 instead of 5-on-5. So if you imagine basically, like, you know, in the NHL when they play 4-on-4 and it opens up the ice a lot, you see a lot of high-quality scoring opportunities. That's a little bit more what you see in inline.
Okay.
And then there's no offsides, too, so they're not waiting to enter the zone. There's not a lot of dump-ins, that kind of stuff. A lot more breakaways, a lot more odd-man rushes. So it makes it very exciting, too, because now you have the factor of the goalie. You can't slide around the net.
Right, yeah.
You got to move. So I guess I work on my diving skills.
Right. That should come in handy, though, on the ice. I mean, at least you can slide on the ice after you make a good dive there.
Yeah,
I was going to say, you've piled up a ton of metal, and I don't mean metal as in, like, M-E-D-A-L, I mean M-A-T-A-L. 4 junior world championship gold medals, 4 senior world championship gold medals in inline hockey, 3 silver medals and a bronze medal. You probably have more precious metal in your, at least in your possession anyway, than some countries do. Where do you keep all of this precious metal?
I feel like you had to talk to my mom because then she was all at her house.
Oh, okay.
So, but she's still home in Bend, Oregon. And yeah. She, especially when I moved around for school and for hockey and then also for my work with engineering, I mean, she's been wonderful. I'm like, Mom, do you want to take the Tokyo with you? And she's like, yeah. So I'm like, okay. So, and I know it brings her a lot of joy. So
that's good.
She has like a little area where she has stuff. But I'm very blessed because without her, I wouldn't make it this far. So she and my entire family too. So more of it, I think it's kind of, it's almost meant to be shared because without them, it wouldn't happen. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
There's such a huge driving factor behind, you know, and support system behind everything. So I'm very grateful for them.
So speaking of being grateful, and certainly this is a reflection of how much your mom was dedicated to making sure that you got to where you needed to be. At age 12, your mom and you saddled up the old automobile and drove some 3 hours to Sherwood, a suburb of Portland, Oregon, to play ice hockey. With Ben being virtually smack dab in the middle of Oregon, you guys must have put a ton of miles on that car to get to, you know, the various rinks you had to get to. How often were you making that trip? And honestly, was there nowhere else you could play?
So technically, if I went any direction, 3 hours. I mean, I could go down to Medford, which is approximately 3 hours.
Oh, okay.
Klamath Falls, about 3.5. Portland was a good option, and we would go over there and I'd play a little bit with like the Northwest Selects. Sometimes we'd make that trip, you know, some years it was like once a month. Sometimes it was two or three times a week. You know, I'm so happy to see in Bend, Oregon now they have an ice hockey rink. I mean,
right
it
on.
Is a seasonal rink, but very excited to see the last, I want to say 2 years, they've had an ice hockey rink and they're really starting to grow an ice hockey program there. So it's cool to know that other players coming up can now practice in town for ice hockey as well as inline hockey and kind of growing that that community there. And it was a lot of fun to go over to Portland. I mean, I guess since I didn't have my license yet, I just got stuck in the back, so it didn't seem half bad.
No, yeah. I hope that if you had your license, I was gonna say if you had your license at age 12, that was impressive though, so not bad at all. According to all the reports we've gone through, and I'm going to sort of use third person here just to discuss the way it's been discussed, but according to all the reports we've gone through, quote, Jetta Ratcliffe was an outstanding netminder with a work ethic that never quit, unquote, in her youth. And that seems to have carried forward into today. Does hearing that kind of description give you a sense of pride? And, I mean, let's be honest, where did this never quit attitude come from?
Honestly, I think not so much a sense of pride. I find it humbling because there's so many people that, you know, when I look back at my journey and think about, you know, how far I've come from a little girl in Bend, Oregon who just wanted to chase her dreams, I think of all the people that really had to be in place to help me. I mean, you look at a huge one is my family, my billet family, you know, everything from like the D1 coaches that some of them didn't have a spot open for a goalie when I emailed them, but were still willing to help me. You know, it's humbling to hear something like that because you try to just keep your nose down and keep working and, you know, focus on what you can control, and to have so many people who believe in you along the way and that are willing to help you is quite the honor. So,
no, I mean, that's awesome. I mean, we can't, again, it seems like everybody you've come in contact with, coaches, former players, everything like that, it seems like everybody seems to think the same thing about you. So, I mean, if the survey says that's what you're doing, we're going to take it as being the entire truth. And I mean, that's awesome that they're giving you, you know, obviously kudos for your net mining, but also the work ethic there as well. If you're just tuning in, folks, we are here on the Hockey Show 101.5 UMFM with Jetta Ratcliffe, who is a goaltender for both Team USA's inline hockey team and for the Boston Blades, which we're going to get to in a few seconds. So, how does the Rochester Institute of Technology, if I can spit those words out, a school in New York, discover Jetta Ratcliffe, a goaltender from Oregon who played with the Anaheim Lady Ducks in the Pacific Coast League?
it's a fun story. Might be a little bit of a long story, so I'll try to
We got time.
I actually had a gentleman who watched me play out on a pond when I was, you know, east of Bend, playing out on a pond with a couple friends. And his daughters, I believe, went on to play Division III hockey, and he was a doctor in Bend, and he grew up in Massachusetts. Well, he saw me play, and he's like, you should go play Division I hockey. And I was like, what's that? And he's like, what do you mean, what's that? Like, you don't know what that is? Like, NCAA? And I was like, what's that? And he's like, what? You didn't know, like, NCAA Division I hockey. And I'm like, oh, okay. And he's like, here, like, look up some school, see if you're interested somewhere. Like, I'll see if I have any connections. You know, reach out to them. So I reached out to, at the time when I was looking it up on Wikipedia, there's 40 women's D1 hockey schools. I sent an email to all of them, and the general response I got back was, you need to play a full season of women's ice hockey. And because I played, you know, dabbled, played girls hockey. I had, you know, played a ton of boys hockey growing up. That's mostly what I played.
Yeah.
Whether it be inline or ice. And so I actually just saw somebody posted a status on Facebook that it was a beautiful day in California, and one of my inline girls just happened to play for an ice hockey team down in L.A., and her coach was looking for a goalie for their senior women's Lady Ducks team, which is actually all full of post-college hockey players.
Okay.
And they needed a goalie for the season so they could go to national championships. So I put my whole life in my little red Honda Del Sol. I have a little 94 Honda Del Sol, and yeah. I drove down there and played for the Lady Ducks. I reached out to all those coaches again, asked them if they wanted to come see me at Nationals. A lot of them were really interested. And at one point, I was very nervous because they would only see me play once. I mean, I sent them video of my games, everything like that. And I had quite a few schools that were interested in me, and a bunch that offered to help. Very notable, the coach at University of North Dakota was extremely helpful and encouraging of me, and I kind of let them know my story and my background. That being said, I started getting recruited by these schools, and actually last minute, RIT popped onto my radar because I was working at Goalie Monkey, and some girl walked into the store and was like, have you looked at RIT? Because originally they weren't D1 when I was looking at all these schools, and I didn't think to look on Wikipedia again. So I contacted them, and they were extremely interested, and they were actually able to offer me a Division I scholarship, but it was actually all academic. And so when I heard that they could offer me an academic scholarship, I decided, I was like, you know, like, maybe this is my break. I'm going to go for it. They had a position open full as a goalie. So I signed on, and, you know, I had a lot of fun playing there. I'm really happy that I did. You know, they told me it would be really tough to take engineering, and I, you know, I agreed with them when I got back all my first, I got back all my first after scores, and they were not great. So, I just figured I need to work a little bit harder and study a little bit more to achieve the goal. So that's how I ended up at RIT. I know it's kind of a long path there, but, very fortunate to play for the Tigers.
Sure, but I mean, again, you know, you never give up on that dream, so to speak, because, I mean, you know, you went from having no ice in Bend to finding places to play to all of a sudden a D1 scholarship, so good for you.
Thank you, sir.
Let's talk about RIT for a little bit here, because it's going to be fun. Your very first college,
okay.
Your very first college game. Showed a little promise as you played the third period of a 12-1 blowout at the hands of Clarkson, but you only allowed one goal in 20 minutes of action. Not bad at all. Your first start came on October 19th against Colgate, despite your former ski coach, again, Shanna Schweitzer, saying about you when you were 12, she doesn't have any fear at all. Were you nervous about either your first appearance or your first start?
Ooh, you know, I guess you can't really think about it. So when I went against Clarkson, I was just chomping up a bit, and I'm like, let me at him. We got this. We can come back. And we lost 12-1 that game. But,
yes.
You know, and just trying to take that same attitude into every game. I mean, I think there's being a goaltender, there's a lot of pressure on your shoulders to perform well and perform consistently for your team. And it's just, I mean, working with a sports psychologist and everything like that, it's just kind of, you have to learn to love the dance, love the pressure, love the nerves that come with it, and then just try to tune everything else out. So that was something I did my best to hone when I was at RIT. You know, every day is not going to be the best, but you just have to have courage to meet the challenge. And I think that's all really anybody can ask of you. So, I mean, whether you're going in, you're down, I guess at the point was 11-1, or you're going into your first start, you have to have courage to meet that challenge. So, you know, what's the worst that could happen, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, it can't be any worse.
Well, just go for it.
At 11-1, it can't be any worse other than 12-1, so no big deal, right? But I mean, good advice right there. You know, got to have courage, got to, you know, face that sort of that anxiety, I guess, that anticipation of getting in there. You did end up losing your first start in overtime by a 2-1 score. Not a bad showing. Nobody's complaining. November 30th, though, 2013. Do you know what happened that day?
November 30th. Oh, let me think.
November 30th, 2013.
Is that a little bit? So let's see. My first start, I want to say it was the 1st of November. So would that be Lindenwood? Was that the first?
That was not Lindenwood, but.
Oh, gosh.
You did win your very first game as a starter when you beat Quinnipiac 4-3 in overtime after making 42 saves that night.
Oh, I remember that. Oh, that was fun.
That was at the Nutmeg Bowl, so yeah.
Oh, the other goalie played so well, too. Oh, that was such a fun battle. She was so nice afterwards, too. Like, oh, you have to love the games where there's just this goalie battle going on.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And it's just a blast, you know?
Did you happen to keep the puck from that historic win?
I believe it, yes. I do. Actually, I'm in my apartment right now. It's in the other room.
Oh, right on. There you go. So we got a historic little piece of memory right there. That's awesome. First collegiate season, not a bad season. Saw you go 3-3-0 with a .384 goals against average, .880 save percentage. But second season, things were kind of up and down. And I'll only say that because your stats improved, but your record didn't, because you fell to 1-5-1 in season two. But your stats went from .384 goals against average to a .236 goals against average. Your .880 save percentage improved to a .913 save percentage. So what changed for you in terms of what you were doing differently in season two that saw your stats take a major jump in terms of the right direction?
That season, I opted to start training up north, actually, of Rochester. I just started training in Toronto with a friend of mine that I had met down when I was in California, and okay. He owned a hockey school up in Toronto. So I started training, and I know when I first came to RIT, we were doing these different drills, and they're like, do a T-push. And I was like, what's that? And they're like, you're what? They're a goalie, like, you're a Division I goalie. And they were just like looking at me with their like, they were looking at me like I was crazy, because I'd never done that. I'd always just shuffled around the crease, which isn't uncommon if you look at certain European styles and stuff, but it's just always had how I had learned. So I really focused on trying to improve my technical game to help me be more consistent. And then also working on the mental side of things. I mean, there's just kind of going back to controlling what you can control, right? So if you try to work on that technical aspect, right, do the right things in the gym, you know, eat right, that kind of thing, hydrate, and just kind of see where the results take you, and just focus on building mastery of being a goalie instead of focusing on the results so much, and just being your best self, right? So that's kind of been my focus ever since that year is, okay, what can I do to, you know, they always talk about, like, competing against yourself, but I think that's, like, such a huge factor. So after that, that's been kind of one of my main goals. So nowadays, I also like to compete against my husband. He was running against me on the track this morning. So it's kind of fun to do that, too. I mean, it's always awesome to have other high-level people to compete against.
Senior, well, I guess not senior season, but your third season, wins kind of continued to avoid you as you finished the season 2-13-1. RIT didn't have a great season, but, and here's where you just mentioned it, consistency became a very common theme that year for you. In your 10 of 16 games that you played, you made 30 or more saves. In 7 of those 16 games, you recorded 2 or less goals against. You recorded a 236 goals against average, so exactly the same as the season before. But your save percentage jumped to 933, which was good for 12th out of all Division I netminders. So aside from the obvious answer of more wins, would there be anything you'd change regarding how you played in your final year of NCAA hockey?
Well, the final year was a lot of fun. We had a great group of girls, and even though, you know, some of those losses were kind of a bummer, if you lose 1-0, 2-0, or something like that, like I said, as a goalie, you just got to be calm, control what you can control, and, you know, just give your team a chance to win every single night. So I just try to focus on that, you know, always keep us right there, and do what I can and just battle my heart out. And it's always fun to battle out those games, right? Especially as a goalie, it's fun when you, you know, can kind of turn on that battle sense and, you know, try to stop shots that maybe, you know, you're not expected to stop and then try to keep the game close. So I think that's probably the most fun thing about being a goalie.
Sure. No, that's fair. I mean, nothing wrong with that. Looking at the academic side, you did all right there as well, it seemed. You were CHA all-academic, I believe, in all 3 years. Is that correct?
I want to say 1 year I missed it.
Right. Sorry. It was your 2015-2016 year that it didn't come up. But whatever, regardless, still all academic in 2 of the 3 years, which isn't bad. The one thing that I, in terms of doing the reading, though, is that it seemed like you were pretty set on what you were going to do once you got to university. There was one interview I read where you were 17 and you were already talking about your goal of being a chemical engineer. Like most kids are like, I just want to go play sports, or I just want to play. How did you get chemical engineer as being like the be all end all?
That's a tough question. I began going to community college because I really enjoyed chemistry.
Right.
You know, usually somebody has a really good teacher. I had a great chemistry teacher. It was so interesting, and I really loved math. And so I started community college. I mean, neither of my parents, you know, so they did a little bit of college. Neither of them graduated from college, and they're both entrepreneurs. You know, when I first moved out from home when I was 17, I waitressed, I rolled burritos, you know, a lot of less than glorious positions. You know, people aren't always the nicest in those situations.
Right, yeah.
And I kind of decided that I was like, you know, if I go to college or I go to play hockey, I should do my best to make it worth it and push myself to be better and push to make my family's life better and lives of my children one day. So, you know, and I love chemistry so much. So one of my professors at CUCC, the community college that I attended, she actually used to work on army tanks and she was a chemical engineer.
Oh, wow.
She would always have this, you know, white hair that popped up and she would like spike it back. And she was always like, all I have are these 10 buttery sausages at the end of my fingers, and I'm balancing on this moving surface with the globe. And she is always so fascinating to me. And she is a chemical engineer, and she advised I try it out, and I absolutely loved it. I just like the perfect mix of chemistry and all the math. I don't know if I said I love that mix of chemistry and math when I didn't get back favorable test results, but you know, I figured with engineering, sometimes people say you have to be smart to do something like that. And I agree that there is a lot of really intelligent people in my class. But I think it's more you have to be hardworking, because for me, I didn't feel that a lot of this information came intuitively like it came to some people. Sometimes I had to sit with it longer. I had to really work to figure things out. And it made solving problems really fun. And you kind of have this problem-solving mentality when you go about things, and there is not always the right answer, right? So I just figured I would just try to go and, you know, hopefully be able to change my stars. And, you know, it's tough because I wish I could say hockey, as, you know, women's hockey player, is it's not always the highest-paid profession. So being able to do something like doing engineering on the side.
Sure.
And then be able to grow women's hockey for the next generation is just an absolute joy. And hopefully make it different for the girls that are coming to our games, you know, and the little goalies that are going to take my spot. So it's kind of cool to be part of, you know, those bricks that are putting together the wall, right? So.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's entirely fair. And I mean, you're definitely, you know, talking the right language in terms of building for the next generation as well there. So let's talk about that then, because after your 2016 play, your final year in NCAA play, the Brampton Thunder liked what they saw and selected you 53rd overall in the draft. Didn't last long, though, as you were traded to the Boston Blades on November 11th, 2016. Obviously, it works out a little bit better for you since you were from that, going to school in that area, knew the area. But was it a shock? Were you shocked to be drafted by Brampton in terms of getting into the league?
Yeah, it wasn't. I mean, I put Greater Toronto Area just for my draft status because I was so close in Rochester.
Yep.
You know, initially I also dabbled with possibly playing in the NWHL, but at the time I believe they had like a clause, so if you're still in college, you wouldn't be able to play. So. Yep. And I had also been in contact with CWHL. I was actually in contact with Boston before the draft.
Okay.
And they were very accommodating. Both teams were. I had a wonderful experience with Brampton. The girls on that team are absolutely top-notch. The goalies are even better, I'm sure, if you've talked to any of them.
Yeah, yeah.
They were wonderful human beings, and they were very welcoming of me. And then actually received a sponsor to be able to go to Boston. So once I went to Boston, my commute became from 2 hours to practice to six.
Oh, geez.
So that was a little bit rough, especially Thursday nights, but because I'd have to be back to class on Friday.
Right.
But it's very much worth it, and it's always an honor to put on a jersey of a women's professional team. And like I said, it gave me a whole new reason why I love to play. I mean, I love to play because it's fun and so many other reasons. But just to see the little girls out there and, you know, they come up to you, they're so excited. It's like I'm a kid again, you know. So especially young goalies with their cute little pads.
Yeah.
So it gives you a whole new reason to play, and I'm very grateful that the CWHL gave me a whole new reason to play. But I love it. I love going out and helping the little ones and that kind of thing. So
that's awesome. I'm going to be honest. There was a void in most of the women's professional hockey fans' lives last year as you didn't play very much. What went on last year?
I'm going to go with upper body injury.
Okay, upper body injury. Can you discuss upper body injury in terms of how it occurred, or does that give too much away?
Yeah, so it actually happened during the game against Calgary, and then I had to get surgery right away to make sure that everything was put back in place correctly.
Okay.
I got cleared in June, right before Worlds. I feel absolutely wonderful. I'm so excited to be back on the ice, right, doing what I love. So I think this is my second or third surgery. So I'm just happy because I know that as an athlete, sometimes, you know, you run into those challenges, and the best thing you can do is just try to work through it and, you know, just make your body as strong as you can to come out on the other end. So, you know, to make yourself a better athlete, I mean, there's so many great examples out there, professional athletes. I mean, I look in ski racing, and all of those girls have just been, you know, you look at someone like Lindsey Vonn, it's just, you know, they've been plagued with injuries, but they don't let it stop them.
Right. Yeah.
So I figured I should take the same attitude. You know, if you run into an injury, you should, you know, take the time, fix it correctly, and then move forward and as strong as you can, right?
So yeah. No, that's
very grateful to be feeling healthy.
Yeah, no, that's the best news of the day by far. If you're feeling healthy, that's a great sign, at least. I mean, we'll get a healthy dose of Jetta this year, which will be great, so that'll be good to see. I'll be honest, Blades have struggled a little bit over the last few seasons. I'm not going to put you on the spot. I'm not going to ask you if you're going to swoop in and save the day, because that's super unfair to you, because I don't know if that's what you're intending to do. But what are you most excited for this season, especially with the fact that now that you have a new coach, new GM named today as well, new opportunities, obviously, this season. What excites you the most for this season coming up with the Blades?
Ooh, that's a fabulous question. I have to say two different things. The first would be going to the games with all the young girls there and having them so excited. I mean, even in Winthrop last year, it was delightful because even when I was on the off the ice, they would all gather around and talk to me and that kind of thing. So that would be number one. And number two would be just selling bucks. You know, it's like I said, it's fun to do the dance and, you know, try to put yourself to the test and, you know, see if how your training pays off and that kind of thing. So I have to say it's always fun. Like it's, I said earlier, too, it's fun to battle. So
yeah,
I'm looking forward to going to battle. It should be a lot of fun this year, especially they have some, you know, big names that are coming in. So it's always fun when the people shooting pucks at you or, you know, have, you know, hard shots. And they make it difficult to read. So it's just, I think it's great to be able to challenge yourself in that way. So I look forward to the challenge, I guess.
Good, good. No, that's, I mean, that's a great answer. Cause I mean, again, we're looking forward to seeing you back on the ice. So I'm going to shift this in a different direction because you recently had a new addition to your life as well. And I think this is an amazing story. You told me a little bit about it early on, and I want to make sure that this gets out because I think this is fantastic. But tell us about, I'm going to say, the love of your life and how you met this lucky gentleman.
Are you talking about my husband? Because I also have a cat.
Well, I don't know if I'd call your cat a gentleman, but maybe he is. But no, yes. How did you meet your husband? Because I think this story is incredible.
Yeah, he actually is also a goalie, and he hopped on the ice a little bit late for some skate. I was out in Oregon, just trying to get some ice time down in Medford, where my dad lives, and. You know, I made a save, and, you know, in pickup hockey, you know, they want the puck, and nobody was open for a pass. So, and no, there was a clear breakaway opportunity. So I skated down on the breakaway, leg fake, trying to go back in. He stopped me. But I, you know, I would like to think that I scored. His version is that, you know, I didn't score. I probably didn't. It wasn't a very good move. But I introduced myself that way. And that's how I met him. He's originally from Ukraine. He's a wonderful human being. I'm very, very happy to have met him. So we actually get to train together, and it's a fun experience. And we have our cat, who I actually got right before I met my husband.
Oh, right.
he's my other main man.
There you go. So you got a couple of main squeezes there, which is fantastic. But no, I mean, that's an incredible story in terms of meeting him, and certainly you know, things blossom from there, which is nice to see. Among the many jobs you've had outside of hockey, because this is another big one, we counted a number of them. You just mentioned a couple, in waitressing and rolling burritos, babysitting, mowing lawns, working at a sports store in the hockey department. But today, you have a fairly incredible job. You work, and again, I don't know if you stop me if I can't discuss any of this, but you work at Hanscom Air Force Base in Massachusetts as Air Force Material Command that has you doing risk management for the Battle Management Directorate's Weather Division. Is that correct?
Yes. So that's what I do over there. I'm part of the PAC program.
Okay.
So, yeah, you don't have to worry. I got clearance to talk to you guys about it.
Again, I was like, if it's classified, just tell me to shut up and I'll shut up. But I mean, it sounds like it's a super important job. So, like, what do you do?
So basically I'm part of what they call the PAC program, the Palisade Fire Program. So what they do is they have us get on the job training, for about a year, and then they send us back to school to get our master's degree, in a STEM field, preferably engineering or similar to what you got before. And then, you come back for a year of on the job training before they place you in a permanent engineering position. And it's such a fun program. You know, and there's a lot of other engineers that I work with on a daily basis. The people at my job are fabulous. And like you said, that's about as much as I can divulge as I risk management for the weather department for the U.S. Air Force. So basically our weather department has a few different bases. And I'm very honored to be part of it at Hanscom. So they do great work. I get to work with brilliant people, and I just try to emulate them every day. So very lucky and very blessed to be part of that program.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's awesome. And I mean, for the work that, you know, the military does, you know, in all facets of the different military, like, huge honor for everybody that's there. We try and make sure that, well, no, I mean, we try and make sure that, you know, we're not taking, you know, the contributions, both, you know, Canadian and for us anyway, Canadian military, and certainly for the U.S. military anyway, you know, what they do and what they go through, the sacrifices they make. I mean, that's heroes work legitimately. And I mean, it's nice to see that, you know, you're in amongst the heroes. 'Cause I mean, yeah, you not only a hero on the ice, but now a hero in real life as well.
Yeah, I was kind of laughing because I got a picture in my mind about whatever I, you know, because my friends know I work in weather. They're like, it says on here that it wasn't going to rain this weekend, you know, and they look at their iPhone. So I'm like, that's not me. This isn't like cloudy with a chance of meatballs where I can just turn it on and all of a sudden it's like rain and hot dogs. It doesn't work like that. They're like, would it make it sunny this weekend?
No. You're not quite
it doesn't work like that.
I was gonna say, you're not quite the weather network, is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not.
Okay. We're gonna wrap this up in a few seconds here. Gonna ask you a couple rapid fire questions. They're mostly yeses and no's. They're fun, they're not gonna be hard. You're gonna have fun with this. So let's start with this one. It's not Tuesday, today is Thursday, but you did name your favorite meal at one point in your life as tacos. Is that still true?
Wait, you woke up a little bit. What was that last part?
It's not Tuesday, it's Thursday today, but you did name your favorite meal at one point in your life as tacos. Is that still true?
Yes.
Yes? Okay.
Absolutely. Maybe breakfast, but no, tacos, yes.
Okay, right on. John Quick, is he still your favorite goalie?
Yes, and Rena.
Oh, okay. You've worn a pile of numbers, most notably 27, 31, and 35. Do these numbers have any meaning to you?
Ooh, 7 was always my brother's number. It's not a traditional goalie number, but I would wear it anytime given the chance. They messed it up one year and gave me 27 on the inline team.
Oh, geez.
Anytime I wear it, we tend to win. I'm not saying it's only weird if it doesn't work, right? So I work for that reason. 35 was given to me at RAP. 31 was given to me. 21, I don't know. We're just having fun with numbers. I was like, oh, why not?
Okay. Who is Ramon?
Oh, Ramon is my little red Honda. So I mean, my new car. He's a Jeep. Ramon's getting a little old.
That's okay, though. Ramon is still a part of your life. True or false, Jed Ratcliffe is a Pan-American athlete.
Is a what American athlete?
Pan American. Did you play in the Pan Am Games?
I did not, actually.
Oh.
I did compete in NORAM for ski racing, which is like a North American Games. They actually never hosted women's inline hockey in Pan American Games, only men.
Oh, that sucks.
I know, bummer, right?
Yeah. They listen, expand the game. Let's go Pan Am Games. If today's Jed Ratcliffe could go back in time and talk to 12-year-old Jed Ratcliffe, what advice would you give to your younger self?
I would probably give myself a hug.
That's good.
And I would say, too, that you may believe no matter what you're going to do it, just be prepared to go on an adventure, because that belief will take you far. But you're definitely going for a ride, right? So I would say just be patient. Just trust that you're going to be who you need to be at the right moment.
I got two questions left here. These ones are fairly easy, although this one might be a little tougher. You're sitting at a table of four with any four people of your choosing, dead or alive. Who would be sitting at your table?
Oh, Grandma for sure.
Yeah, okay, good.
She's a gem. You know, I'm tempted to pick a lot of famous people, but since I don't get to see my family often, I'd have to choose family members. So, I get to sit at the table with my husband every night.
I was going to say, do we need to add more seats then for more family members? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I guess I would grab, like, you know, grandma, auntie, mom, and dad.
Okay. You have mentioned her a couple of times. Your grandmother is a phenomenal woman. You've mentioned her as your hero on a number of sites when we were looking up some information. She's getting older, but still going from what you've said. Why is she your hero?
This is honestly, anytime anybody asks me questions about her, I get excited. So she is my hero because she is so persistent and she's so calm. She's lived through, you know, she's broken her hip, I think, twice, or she's broken her back. She's had breast cancer. She's had multiple heart surgeries for a pacemaker. She had congestive heart failure at my graduation about a year and a half ago. Jeez. And, you know, they said she wasn't going to live a couple weeks or even a month, and she doesn't really seem to care what the doctors think. you know, she's had pneumonia, all of the above, right? But she tells me she wakes up every day, and she's like, you know, I wake up every day, and every little cell, you know, they don't complain. They just do their job, you know, and
yeah.
They get up and just do the best they can, you know. So she walks down, you know, maybe a half mile down to my mom's house every day, and she's 95, and she's just so calm, so kind. I really couldn't ask for a better role model. And, I mean, everyone in my family, I think they're good role models, but she's definitely one of the best, and I'm very grateful for her.
We got about 30 seconds here, Jetta. I'm going to give you the floor. Anything you want to say, anybody you want to say hi to, any message you want to get out to fans?
I would love to say just thank you to all my wonderful family and all those beautiful people that have got me this far. And I think that's it. I think that's all I have. You know, that's all I got. Thank you to my wonderful family, because it wouldn't be possible without them. And then all the wonderful sponsors that have, you know, helped me out along the way.
I do want to say thank you. Thank you for joining us tonight. Thank you for coming on. And an hour just doesn't seem like it's long enough, so we're going to have you back at some point, because you might just be the most interesting woman in hockey at this point. We want to say thank you. And by all means, if there's anything you want to promote, anything you want to do, if you ever want to come back, Jetta, door is always open for you. We cannot say thank you enough here.
Thank you so much, Trevor. I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Honestly, it was my pleasure. Like I said, I wanted to get to talk to you because you had gone through so much and done so much and do everything. So, again, door is always open. Don't feel like you can't reach out and get back on the show anytime you want.
Will do. And what's life without a little adventure, huh?
Hey, and good luck this season in terms of getting back on the ice. Obviously, after the injury last year, the upper body injury, want to make sure you have a great season this year as well. So good luck, and we'll see you on the ice for sure.
Thank you, Trevor.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Jetta. Have a great night.
You too. Take care.
Bye. So there is Jetta Ratcliffe, everybody. I'm going to get out of here right away. I'm going to let Skippy come in and get on this show. We don't have a lot of time to waste here, because I'm eating into his time right now. I'm going to get out of here, though, with Mitchell Meisky playing Bach Cello Suite Number 1, as chosen by our guest tonight, Jetta Ratcliffe. If you missed anything, make sure you check out the podcast coming up right away on 101.5 UMFM and on UMFM.com. I guess it's not going to be on the radio right away, but on UMFM.com for sure. It's a hockey show for another week, everybody. We'll see you next Thursday here on 101.5. Thanks for tuning in tonight.